nice yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
I don't have the words to describe how I feel. There were stages over this past 3 years where we were very disappointed and it seemed like this day would never come. But at last, and thank God, it eventually has.
So there you go, Conan. I don't have the words to describe how I feel, says Henry. Very touching.
Willie, I feel like I was born to do this podcast with you.
Where were you when those words were being said?
I was watching in the house, jealous of my big brother, who he was the one that got to go and watch it. But I must say, I watched it back again, obviously, last night, and I was so proud. It's just so rare, like, you know, to have everybody in the country talking about Derry, like, you know, when they're talking about them, like, everybody wanting them to win, and just haven't been that level since, like, and it almost brought a tear to me last night watching it.
Well, that was the thing. So Henry Downey said then after that, he said there are stages over the past 3 years where we were very disappointed and it seemed like this day would never come. There was almost like a desperation for Derry to win it because they've been beaten by Down after a replay in 91. They won the All-Ireland, then favourites against Donegal in 92. They went and won the All-Ireland. Like, I mean, Derry must have been thinking, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, and like he had a great line. Like, he said Cork might not appreciate it, but we needed this way more than Cork needed it. And I think that was just bang on. Like, and actually, you know, I think about what was happening like during the 90s and like around the 80s as well. They won a lot of minors under 21 titles, and
yeah,
there was pandemonium building in the county. Like, and that was fever pitch. I think that's obviously the peak of Derry football, and that really got everybody galvanized and it captured their imaginations. But so much so, it's been so bad since that we still just talk about that team and think about that team. But at that time, that was something else.
So that was the thing. So, like, I mean, Eamon Coleman led was manager in 1983. Derry won the minor All-Ireland, and then he brought them to an Ulster under 21 in 85. And then they won the All-Ireland minor again in 89. So Gary Coleman, Heaney and Toholl came off that 89 minor team. And they would have got a good few back off the 85, 83 team. So, you know, this team was probably built off those minor wins.
Yeah, I think they won three in 4 years at the start of the decade as well, 80, 81 and 83, I think that was. Like, I remember Dermot McNichol played in all three of them. He was playing minors for 4 years. But Eamon Coleman, Eamon Coleman is probably the big difference. I know he had a special team there, but Gary Coleman told a great story at Eamon's wake. He said some fella came over and introduced himself to him and said, "You don't know me, Gary, but I met your father on a plane back from London." And Eamon told him, "I'm on my way back to take the Derry senior football team." And he said, "We're going to won the All-Ireland within 3 years." Do you know, and like they did, but they won the All-Ireland in the third year, whatever, but nobody ever thought like that. In my time, they didn't come into Derry and think, "We're going to win an All-Ireland." He was the one that came in and set that bar, and I think everybody just followed that.
Right, fantastic. And I suppose a big thing as well, Anthony Toholl left in after winning the minor All-Ireland to go to Australia, and he spent 18 months out there. So I think it was 1991 he came back, which was a huge relief for Derry people.
Yeah, and like, I suppose like a lot of people who go out to Australia, like Toho went out as a big 6'4". He wasn't a beanpole, but he came back an animal. Like, you know, and his strides were bigger and they were stronger and he was just more powerful. Like, you saw, like, you know, in that game, people just bouncing off him. Like, and like, I think him going to Australia for 2 years, he broke his leg now. He might have done a bit better out there. He came back. But that probably did him the world of good, just coming back as a professional athlete.
Yeah, exactly right. So let's cut to this biggest talking point of this game, and that's Tony Davis getting sent off. An absolutely desperate, desperate decision. And one thing that struck me about Tony Davis, when Dermot Heaney was walking over to him before the game, he gave him a lovely little tap on the back. A very sporting player, Tony Davis, shook his hand. Now, Heaney was starting to cause him problems. And, you know, after a good early pint, Davis scored. Heaney was getting on top of him and he was starting to give him a bit of a roasting. And you could see Tony Davis getting a little bit frustrated. right? But there is no way that this was in any way, shape or form sending off. Interestingly, Colin, there was no yellow cards back then, which I didn't know about. So you either got it, you either got like a ticking to, a talking to, or a tick in the book or whatever, or you got sent off. If there had been yellow cards, Tony Davis is on record as saying it was a yellow card offence.
Oh, that is not, I didn't know that. That's crazy. Yeah. And like, yeah, like it's heartbreaking. Like, you know, even as Derry man watching it like that, that I can't remember a worse decision in an All-Ireland final, like, you know, for somebody to be sent off and miss the rest of the game in the first half as well. And it was really annoying. Obviously, like, I think Tommy Howard was the referee. Like, he was just reacting to, there were two big incidents minutes before that. I don't know, yeah, we'll talk about them, but like Brian McGilligan said it all off. His challenge is way worse than Tony Davis. He hit Cahillan, actually, yeah, yeah, shoulder to the head.
And fair, did Cahillan just hop straight back up after that?
He did. And then obviously him and Gormley. And then I think Davis went to nail, like, you know, Heaney, and he foiled him. That was it. But I think the referee just decided, no more, like, you're not, this game's getting out of control. But he let it get out of control, and then it just made the rashest decision of it. Like, it was terrible. Like, and I felt so sorry for him even watching it back.
Yeah, and like, I mean, incredibly that Tony Davis, his brother Don was on the field, and his clubmate was captain that day as well. McCarthy in the corner. So, like, I mean, a complete heartbreaker that, you know, to affect your own clubmate lifting the cup and to share a potential All-Ireland win with your brother is just desperate. So, like, I was in disbelief watching it, knowing he got sent off, and still watching this in disbelief that Tommy Howard had sent him off for what was no more than, let's kind of dump Downey out over the sideline here. Now, a little bit aggressive, but, like, I mean, hit him in the hip.
Yeah, like, but it was aggressive, but like it was an All-Ireland final. Again, Derry were starting to exert their physical dominance, so I think, you know, Cork were trying to retaliate. Like, you have to remember as well, this was on the sideline where there were people sitting, you know, so like, you know, it's not just a normal shoulder. It means more when you're over there, and it's big Dermot Heaney, like, so you need a lot of force to push him over the line. And actually what happened, I think if Heaney had got up, it would have hit him in the shoulder, but Heaney sort of stayed low and drove out as he was sort of bending over, and then so like Davis just caught him from behind.
That was it, exactly. And like you're saying, the Cahillan punch on Gormley, which was from a Derry point of view the best punch he could ever have gotten, because it woke him up and got him to start playing. But Cahillan, that was a desperate punch, really. But like, I mean, this is like holding Gormley's hand, and Gormley punched his hand, which every forward would, get off me. And the reaction was just to give him a punch straight into the jaw, and Gormley not expecting it. A filthy challenge. So like, when you look at it, like, I know Tony Davis was hard done by, and if Cork people say, oh, if we'd stayed 15, we would have had a better chance. But like, yeah, that was an injustice. But there was also an injustice with Cahillan staying on the field. So no matter what way you look at it, they should have been down to 14 men coming up to half time.
Yeah, that's it. But that also sort of smacked of how bad a game that Tommy Howard was having. Like, you know, the fact that he went over and did he take Cahillan or whatever? You know, we had words of him. It's like, what are you, either you saw the point or you didn't. Like, you know, what are you writing down in your little book? But as you say, like, it was definitely the best reaction I've ever seen to somebody being hit in the face. And it's a great advertisement for getting a belt in the head, you know, to get your game going.
You get all that kind of, and really, really woke up Gormley, like, who scored a point not long after and came back touching, or pointing his finger at Cahillan, like, I mean, and now his tail was up, you know. Sometimes I needed something like that to get me going.
Yeah.
You shouldn't need it in an All-Ireland final, but sometimes it even might wake you up out of your nerves, or, you know, whatever might be kind of on top of you at the time.
I honestly think I'm terrible for that. Like, you know, if I get a belt in the head, I'm way better. I'm tuned in. Like, you know, when that first or 5 minutes afterwards from Gormley, he scored 2 points, he won a breaking ball, he the second point he got was that fist over the bar with people clamouring in the top. He was just up for it from there on, which he probably didn't need.
The whole thing, it becomes personal then. So I'd say Gormley just pushed the All-Ireland to one side and went, I'm going to get this lad is getting it off me. And maybe the evidence is there that it helped his game.
Yeah, like, he went after ball harder and like for longer than he was doing. Like, you know, as you said, he wanted to get revenge in his way. And do you know what the funny thing is? Like, those two actually played together out in New York a few years before that. And Gormley told the cracker story of the two of them drinking one night in a pub after a game. And Cahillan said to him, the problem with Northern teams is they're too obsessed with being physical, and they go after the man and not the ball. And Gormley was like, I was the one lying comatose 3 years later in Coupe Park.
A classic. Coffey could have got a red for a late foul on McGurk late in the game, hit him very high. Now I know he's a small enough player. It's Barry Coffey, you know, but Johnny McGurk was kind of all over the place. It was very high and it was rash. But anyways, that's kind of the sendings off covered a little bit. You mentioned the crush on the end. I don't think the Tony Davis sending off was on that side. That was Hogan's stand side. The crush people were all sitting all lined up along the Cusick stand side, I thought. And it was gas because in the second half, there was a big hit on Kieran McKeever, who was running up the sideline and stuck him out.
Oh, yes.
And he landed on supporters who, have to be said, were brilliantly behaved on the sideline. Because this was, and then Anthony Toole took the free because it was a late hit, and Anthony Toole is just kind of shooing them away, you know, like a golfer would when he has to go into the crowd to make space for himself to take the free.
It was funny because someone was sort of looking up at him as if to say, "What's your problem?" But like, Toole takes these big steps to the left, and he was sort of looked a bit annoyed at them. Like, but it was bizarre. It actually it looks scary, especially like, knowing what we know now and stuff as well. But like, it looks scary for a period. And I was wondering why all these people were so well behaved along the sideline. I was thinking if these boys are like forcing their way into a game, like they mustn't be that well behaved. But then I think the people who forced their way in took their seats. There was the people at the front who had to sit on the pitch then.
Well, you'd have to say, like, I mean, when you, like, this was 1993, like, the stewards did a great job there. The game wasn't disrupted. There was people in serious, you know, condition who, you know, after being crushed, especially a couple of women that were very obvious, you know, struggling to breathe. They got them, they opened the gate, they got them in, they didn't interrupt the game, and, like, fair play all around to the stewards.
Yeah, no, like whoever acted like that, it was so quick thinking, because your natural reaction, especially, like, you know, we know a lot of stewards. I'm sure you've got plenty around Port Leash as well. They're the same as the ones in my club, but, you know, their natural thing would be to push everybody back and say, no, rules are rules, and they would force it back, and then that would lead to the crush. But whoever just let it go and let the flow happen instead of a bottleneck, like, they really do deserve some sort of medal. They could probably save lives, is the reality. Yeah.
There's stewards I've seen in action that could see someone dying being crushed up against the gate and go, "Sorry, now I understand that this is very difficult for you. You're dying, but I cannot break the rules here. I cannot think for myself and actually let you in."
Did you not see his high-vis jacket?
Did you not see my badge? I am a steward. And I'm a volunteer.
But it was chaos. There's people sitting up in the barbed wire and all as well. Like, and you look through the attendances, you know, of the Ireland finals throughout the years, and like, was it 64,000 was the attendance of Croke Park, or the capacity of Croke Park at that stage? And for this one, it was like 65,500. You know, right. More people in, obviously.
That are actually piling in. Right, come here, we'll leave it there, Conan, because Fergal McCusker joins us on the line. Now, Fergal, we were talking there about Tony Davis sending off and what a dreadful decision it was.
Yeah, it was a very poor decision all round. But I suppose you put it into the context of the game and what had happened and what had gone on before it. It was, I think he paid the penalty for what happened with Callahan and Enda Gormley. And he maybe thought he had missed out in that one. And maybe it was in his head he'd made a mistake. Only Tommy Howard knows that. And I think, unfortunately for Tony, now it wasn't a great tackle, but by no stretch of the imagination was it a sending off.
No, sure. Like, back in 93, those challenges were going in all over the place. It was just a shoulder that kind of got, I'm not sure, geez, I can't remember what Derry player it was. Got him in the hip anyways, because he was bending down. It was nothing in it at all.
It was a line ball underneath, the line underneath the Hogan stand.
On the line,
Dermot Heaney, I think it was bound to pick it up, and it was clumsy by Tony, and there was a wee bit of malice in it. But yeah, you're right. Going on, like, I'd watched recently there the Ulster final. I hadn't seen it in 20 years, and Jesus, you really, you know, you're getting your head carried off in that game before it was a free given. So, and that's the way it was in those days. I don't want to look back over some of the glasses either, but it was a bit tougher, and definitely it was out of context, and it definitely wasn't a sending off.
Yeah, and exactly. And the thing about it was like, if Cork are saying that was an injustice, they got away with the injustice. You mentioned Cahillan's punch on Enda Gormley, like, you know, a sneaky punch that probably wasn't that uncommon off the ball back in the early 90s. But, like, I mean, in a funny way, it woke Enda Gormley up and he started kicking bloody brilliant stuff after that.
Yeah, Enda's a very good friend of mine, clubman of mine. I've known him since he was 12 years old and I was 8 years old. And We still laugh and joke about it. And he still talks about this flu he had before the match, and he couldn't get on the bus going up Mahara Street on the Saturday before the game, and that this was his excuse for not playing well. But really and truly, and he still drags the shit out of me because for the ball I play into him, and he says it all went over his head, blah blah blah. But anyway, he wasn't really in the game. He got the slap, probably after that, he was certainly a contender for man of the match. He didn't miss very much after that. He won every ball that came into him. But just anecdotally on that, Barton, actually, you won't ever see it in the game, or it's not anywhere on the any footage. But Damien, I think, took retribution on Cahalan very shortly after that, and I think there was a few teeth rattled anyway on Cahalan, and he certainly got slab after that. And I think actually Tom Hurd might have thought it was Toho, but it was definitely Damien. So there was retribution during the game, although, you know, Cork obviously paid the penalty for Niall's indiscretion with what happened to Tony.
Yeah, exactly. Cork were flying it in the first 10 minutes. Like, Jesus, I think it was 1-2 to no score, and he took a little while to settle. There was probably nerves floating around your dressing room.
Oh, well, no, just Cork were flying, and I was off the pace. I was marking Don Davis. Don was playing wing half forward. Yeah. I was actually named cornerback, but I actually played most of the game out at wing half. I was on Don, and if the first ball, Don went past me as if it wasn't there. I was chasing back to get him. He laid the ball off to Joe Cavanagh. Joe roofed it, and that was the first goal that we conceded in the championship that year. And then you see in the footage, you see Henry looking at me going, "Fergal P, pick that man up!" Like I was chasing Don Davis, and it was Joe Cavanagh was Henry's man. So it was him who scored the goal. So we were certainly at sea a little bit
Actually that the timing of the run by Cavanagh, and they did that a few times in the first 10 minutes. They were just seen to be coming off the shoulder and punching holes like that.
Oh, they did, and they, like, that was a fairly potent forward line. Like, yeah. You had in Barry Coffey, wing half forward, and then you had Corkery and my old friend John Ozusko, full forward. Like, it wasn't, and Michael McCarthy, God rest him, who's unfortunately was killed in a car crash sometime after. But it was a potent forward line. They had plenty of pace. Yeah.
No, it definitely was. So, like, I mean, Henry Downey said in his speech after the game, he said there were stages over the past 3 years where we were very disappointed and it seemed like this day would never come. So, like, I mean, you'd been beaten by All-Ireland champions in 91 and then All-Ireland champions in 92. And I suppose you're thinking, Jesus, when is it going to be our turn?
Well, to put that in a wee bit of context, there was a lot of those guys where we knew a lot of, from being in Belfast together. There was Sigerson football being played, like all those Down players and Derry players, Gormley, McNichol, DJ Keane, Greg Blaney, they were all mixing. And those boys knew that those other guys were no better than them. And we knew that they were no better footballers than we were. Down were able to break through probably because of the tradition before that. They'd won 3 All-Irelands before that. And, people can knock tradition, but if you haven't won it before, to try and win your first is very difficult. But whenever Down did it in 91, and then Donegal beat us deservedly so in the Ulster final in 92, I think Andy Toole broke a toe in the first half of that game, but that wasn't why we were beaten. We were just beaten well that day, but it was again another disappointment logged on to what had happened in 91. And so I don't think, like, there was nothing going to stop us in 93, and I mean that sincerely. Like Donegal can complain about the weather and Clonus in 93 in the Ulster final, but I watched that, as I said, for the first time. We beat them fairly and squarely. We beat them well that day. Eamon had us, you know, we would have gone through a brick wall at any of those games to win. But definitely Down doing it before us and Donegal doing it before us, that gives you the impetus and gives you the drive you needed to get over the line for that first time for us.
Right. Dad, you mentioned the Ulster final. Like, I mean, how did that game go ahead? The splashing and the amount of water that was on the pitch. What were the conversations going on? Was it looking like it wasn't going to go ahead, or was it always going ahead?
No, probably TV played a part in that again, as usual. But there was a minor game before that. Derry were playing the minor final as well, and a young lad, Cahill Scullion, broke his leg. And so you know, he might have broken his leg in any game, but you know, the warning signs were there, and you knew yourself, like you couldn't, you bounced the ball, it just didn't come up. It just,
yeah.
And there was puddles, like not just puddles of water, like it was pools lying everywhere. Like it was just, it was dangerous stuff. Now, it made for compulsive viewing. It was a great, you know, for, okay, it was only, the score was low scoring, it was 8-6, but by God, it was compelling now.
Yeah, and why were Donegal given out afterwards? Because you would be seen as a bigger kind of a bigger team than them, or a more physical team, and that you that those conditions would have suited you.
No, they were given out because they were beaten. Well, you know, if they had a won, there wouldn't have been a word about it. We would have been the ones complaining. So it's just, that's just the way of it. Calm.
Okay. And come here, the All-Ireland final, just to come back to it in 93, like the first half was fantastic. Like you said, you were playing wing back. I think you went in on Corkery for a little while. He started getting on top of Coleman. But then after the sending off, you must have rejigged it around and you were back out again. But the first half was a brilliant game to watch. I don't know what it was like to play in.
Yeah, it was super. Like, it was All-Ireland finals, is whatever young boy dreams of playing in, and then you're running out and a cauldron of noise coming down on top of you, and Derry had massive support there that day, and maybe it was nervous, but it was like, Cork were a very decent football team, and we were definitely, there was no blanket defence in those days. It was man on man. You won your battles, and maybe a wee bit of aimless kicking going on, but it was honest, and you know, that was fast flowing. There was no series of five or six hand passes in a row, or maybe holding the ball for, you know, you wanted to get the ball forward as quickly as possible and try and score. So that was the, and Billy Morgan would have been the same. That would be, he liked to play football as well. So both teams went at it, and you know, they were a physical side too. You remember they had Shea Fahey in the middle of the field, and the Stephen O'Brien, the centre half back, Teddy McCarthy was there as well. Danny Caldy came on the second half, like there, and Corky, you mentioned before, like big units of men too, but. Yeah, it was free flowing, and then they managed to get a good goal in the second half too. Probably I was at fault there as well. I was, John O'Driscoll, as I say, my old friend, I worked in the bank, or he worked in the bank, and we toured together in America with the Gaelic team. I knew John quite well at the time, and the super super footballer, and strong as an ox for the size of him, and he scored a beautiful goal, like ball played over the top from Don Davis.
Some pass by Don Davis, so it just perfectly weighted into his path.
Oh, brilliant vision. Brilliant vision. He caught us open completely. And but, you know, we were able to weather it.
Well, they didn't score after that.
No, they didn't. We held out. I think they got, that was their final. They got, was it 2-8 to 1-14 teams at the final score? Yeah.
That was their last that was their last score that went, put them one up with the win. Now, I know they were a man down, but like, I mean, he scored the last 4 points then after that, which was, you know, for a team who hadn't won in All Ireland before against Cork, you know, that's some performance.
Yeah, it showed a bit of Cork. And we always had belief in our ability. Now, we were, you know, we were laced with some tremendous footballers, like Anthony Tolo was probably as good a player as I ever played with in my year, in my generation. Like Coleman used to say about him, he was, said, only asked him about him and John McDermott. John was pretty proficient at that time, but Coleman says, well, you never see 1-5 after John McDermott's name on a score sheet. So, you know, that was Tolo. He could do everything. Like, he had the ability to score goals. He was strong, you know, on the air, and intelligent footballer too. And then you McGilligan beside him just cleared a path for him, and was a very underrated midfielder as well. And then, you know, up front we'd end up taking the scores. Joe, all the pace that he had, with Henry Downey, a brilliant captain, centre half back. Tony Scullion was there as well, and just, you know, Kieran McKeever, most underrated player probably in Ireland.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Kieran McKeever. Last week we did the Ulster final in 97, one that didn't work out too well for you. You were wing forward that day, but I thought Kieran McKeever was outstanding bursting forward that day in 97 as well.
Yeah, like Kieran, I mean this, like, you could have played Kieran anywhere. You could have played him centre half forward. He didn't really play up front for Derry, but he really could have played anywhere. You wanted to mix it with him all day long. You wanted to play football. The best man marker we ever had. And we've had a few good ones, like Sean Marty came after him. But Kieran McKeever is pound for pound as good as there was out there at that time.
Yeah, you actually were on the, like, you could have been found anywhere on the field. You played full forward when you came on the scene first in a league final. Is that right? Then you're corner back, you're wing back, you're wing forward in that 97 game. Because I was looking at it going, is he gone up wing forward now wearing the bicycle shorts? The, you know, corner back from 93, yeah. Which are, like, I mean, you just played all over the place.
That's right, Colin. Well, I would have go back a wee bit without boring you. I would have played schools football for Aidan. I'd have been a forward, but Aidan would have converted me back. Aidan McGoughlin would have converted me back into centre half back or Macquarie Cup team. So it maybe came from that. And then through Eamon Coleman's time, I'd have mixed between half forward and half back. But you know, sometimes I got now. I wasn't. I'll hold my hand up myself. I wasn't the greatest defender in the world as in man on man, and has probably borne out in the All Ireland final, but. I was fairly athletic and I was able to get forward, so half forward, half back, whatever. But yeah, you're right, 91, we were that National League team. I remember playing against in the semi-final against Meath in Croke Park and Mark and McLean, so that was an education and a baptism now, so.
Right, that's interesting because I was talking to Tony Boyle recently and he was talking about Mark and Mick Lyons as well, and people were texting him all week in the build-up to it saying, don't look him in the eye, don't shake his hand. If you shake his hand, he'll do something to you, like completely freaking him out about Lyons.
Oh, yeah, as if they had a spell over you and he would do something differently. But he was some man, one man, I tell you, but he was some footballer and like maybe not even the hardest man on that team. If you look back on that team, but and that was, if you look at their forward line as well, some of their forwards were harder than the defenders. Like, so there was some out for that Meath team now.
Yeah. Camira, what did you, like, Eamon Coleman obviously lost his job in 1994. You played down in an all-time classic. And down beat you. Like, again, now there's an All-Ireland win and losing, no backdoor, losing to three All-Ireland winners. And he got the sack, which seems to be like a very strange decision.
Well, you said it, Colin, yeah. Very, very strange. And I suppose we will get over the time will heal. But I think certainly any of those boys were involved in that in 94, 95. You know, speaking to a few of them, myself as well, probably the regret was that we did go back and play in 95. We sat it out for long enough and we held out for Eamon, but I know Eamon asked us to go back for the sake of Derry football, and that was how magnanimous the man was, that even though he was wrong so badly that and we were trying to show our loyalty towards him, he realised that life had to go on and he wasn't going to get back in no matter what happened. But yeah, Tone beat us in 95 then in Clonus, and the team sort of disintegrated after that. Well, it had disintegrated before that, in fairness, if I was being honest. So,
right. And like, I mean, when you look back on that, like, the 90s was an unbelievable success, really, between league titles, you know, the All-Ireland title in 93, but like, you were favourites in a few matches. I'm thinking 92 against Donegal, you know, I'm thinking 97 against Cavan, 95 against Tyrone. I don't think the favourites tag did you any favours,
no,
did it?
It didn't, but you got to remember too, Colm, like, Derry's, we punched well above our weight. Like, we're a very small county. We've only ever won, I think, 7 Ulster titles. We won a National League in 47, we won, and then we won an R4 just in the 90s, and then we won, like, our last one was 2008, I think, or 2010. We won 7 Ulster titles. Say first one in 58, they went on to the All-Ireland final. Then next one was 1970, then 75, 76. And then you have 87, we won one then, and Meath beat us in Ireland semi-final. And then 93, obviously, we went on and won it. 98, after that, was our last title. So, like, we are probably second worst county in Ulster as regards Ulster titles. So this thing about, you know, we probably punched well above our weight. That team came along, it was laced with tremendous footballers. Probably once in a lifetime. I don't think, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think just the way football is now, and like the chances of not an underdog but a team from outside the big three or four coming back to win All Ireland is sort of like Legion won in 94, that sort of thing. Clare coming through whenever they did in 92.
Those
sorts of things are going to become rarer and rarer. But I would always say that I was lucky to win one All Ireland because we've never won one before. But then all people say, well, you should have won more. Who knows, if we had had a back door, would we have come back against Down in 94? Probably, given the run they had to the All Ireland final. I'm not saying it was an easy run. All Irelands aren't easy won, but the run they had after that was fairly straightforward. 95 after Tyrone Bidis would be have come back up to snow under normal circumstances with the team we had and Eamon being in charge again and that we possibly would have. You go back before 93 to 91, 92, where were we ready? Donegal are down to say the same thing. Like they would probably say after 93 if they had an or rattled us, they might have taken us in later stages. But it was a golden era now. It was certainly a very varied, the 90s was very varied in the number of teams that won the All-Ireland during that decade.
It definitely was. That's interesting that you say like Derry have got the second lowest Ulster titles, because I was a teenager in the 90s and I just see Derry as being a powerhouse where traditionally that's not the case at all.
Well, that was all down to Ian McComan. You know, he came along in 89, 90 under Father Sean Higgerty, and then he got in himself after that and pulled together and got teams like players from Lavey and Dungiven and whatever that wouldn't necessarily have seen eye to eye, and we got McGilligan and Johnny McGurk and guys like Henry Downey and McKeever and those guys all playing together and all pulling for the jersey. And for once in our lifetime, we got county first before club. Right. So that was the genius of Eamon Coleman and his man management of all day.
I think it was Tony Scullion I saw a quote from saying that he never saw himself as being above the players. He'd play cards with you on the back of the bus and kind of things like that.
Okay, he was a real man's man. Like that was the brilliance of him. But as Tony said as well, once he stepped off the bus and into the change rooms, he switched to turned a switch. Different animal altogether. But just you'd never see him dissing his players in an interview after the game. It was always, he always backed the players to help. You know, you'd have got the absolute roasting of all roastings from him. Like, and he knew who to give the roastings to, and he knew who to stay away from. But that was, I suppose, and he knew who a roasting would sit well with, and he knew who to the arm around the shoulder when that was required. So just small things like that.
You can't learn that stuff. That's your personality. That comes naturally probably to you, how to know that kind of stuff. Come here, had he been butting heads with the county board, or is there any more, do you know any more information on why he would have gone in 90 after 94?
Well, there was some, not much information's come out about it, but there was some chat that just shows you what the times were like, that he had asked for a few pound because he had missed out on he was labouring at the time, he was a bricklayer, and I think he'd asked for a few bob. I think he read that book Boys in 93 by Maria McCourt. It details it fairly well, but nothing of substance. He went to America, a big deal. He went to America after Derry put out in 94, along with Andy Gormley and Guy Coleman, Kieran McKeever, and a few others. They went out to Chicago and spent a summer out there, and this was used that he hadn't watched the club championship at home, and
right.
Like, just ridiculous stuff. And Guy unfortunately would be marking Mickey Linden in 94, and Mickey Linden, no harm to anybody, would have roasted anybody. I think Kieran went to him in the second half, maybe quiet him down a wee bit, but and there was accusations of nepotism and stuff. Like, it was just nonsense. Like, it was just, there was no substance to it at all. There was no rain. What other county in Ireland? You win your first All-Ireland in your history, probably the only one you're ever going to win, and then you're beaten in the first round of the championship in the next year in the game of the decade, they're talking about, or the game of the century. Yeah. And you're beaten by a point, by a late goal, and then suddenly you're sacked.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
That's crazy stuff. So, you were in a standoff with the county board then. You were one of the founders of the GPA. Did that kind of click, this kind of switch in your head around that time?
No. The GPA thing, actually, well, was yes, central to involved, well, in the standoff, I suppose. We were all was involved in the fact that there was, I was one of maybe 20 players that we were refusing to play for Derry because until he was reinstated. So, but the GPA thing was just really, as you know yourself, Colin, playing at the time, all you wanted was, you weren't out of pocket for playing football,
yeah.
But you know, that you had a pair of boots, maybe that your gear was right, and that sort of thing. It was no, maybe we hit the door, and that you were playing for so long, or training for so long, for 6 months a year, and then suddenly you could be gone in one match. But that's, looking back on that now, actually, it was, that's how I felt at the time when we were playing. But looking at it now in the back door and how games are sort of meaningless now, and the, you know, you look at the fervor and the, how exciting games are whenever it's a straight championship, whenever there's, like Frank Wilkins famously said, I don't want to watch any game where nobody loses. Like, so what interest do people have in that? You're only watching football where there's something at stake, and championship football is that, and that's the beauty of it. So ironically, looking back on it now, I'm sorry that we actually pushed for that. The straight knockout would be brilliant now, and as regards fixture congestion, like, and how the county game has morphed into what it's morphed into, and you see it, how it's disadvantaged the club player now, and which is the bread and butter where it's at, and I don't care what the Croke Park say, they are really the club football is now really the fucking man. It's all about the, it really is all about the money and all about the TV rights and all about county football. And it's the wrong way around. It actually should be like rugby, where you are released from your club to play for your county.
Yeah,
like it's gone a completely tail wagging dog.
We might see a knockout this year, anyways. The way things have turned out,
it would be brilliant. Imagine a championship run off in 4 or 5 weeks, where you had maybe a game under lights on a Wednesday night, or it was just straight knockout, and you run it through, and games on Saturday, games and whatever Wednesday games that fall on Saturday, Sunday, and it'd be brilliant. And actually, if one good thing is out of COVID-19, it might be that it might show the GA how we actually could run off an inter-county championship or an All-Ireland in 6 weeks. Because the problem is, and we all know what the problem is, the various provincial councils will not give up the golden goose of what they have, and that's where they get the money from. And they then have the voting rights at Congress. They're never going to vote this in. So, but you might see a push for change if this actually does. If we do get a championship runoff in 2020, and it is done in 4 to 6 weeks, I'm sure that we can do it. Then why not?
Exactly. Why not? Fergal, thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem, Colin. Take it easy. All the best.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out, and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out. And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Okay, so Derry 114, Cork 2-8. And, you know, tactically, straight away, I thought it was a strange one in Gary Coleman going in on Colin Corkery, who wouldn't have had the size for him at all. Fergal McCusker went out on the wing. I kind of always saw Gary Coleman as an attacking-minded player. Now, I know Fergal McCusker was as well. So, like, and Kieran McKeever probably wasn't the man for Corkery. So maybe that's why they had to put Coleman back in there, Colin.
Yeah, but like, I just think, like, you know, put your best defender on, you know, and then worry about the size and the strength or whatever else, because it's all well and good. Like, maybe they thought, you know, Coleman had the agility and a bit of the strength for him, but like, he wasn't as good a cornerback, obviously, as McKeever. I would have looked at that first. I could understand Fergal McCusker being pushed out, because in my head, he's never a cornerback anyway. He's a ball player, like, you know, yeah. So he suits being out the pitch. But you have Tony Scullion in there as well. I think maybe the problem is that you just had, you know, three good full forwards in Cork, and John O'Driscoll and Nick McCarthy as well. So they needed all covering. And interestingly, it was actually Scullion who made the call at the start of the second half, when obviously Cork were rejigging things with 14 men. And Scullion told Fergal McCusker to push out on John O'Driscoll, who had drifted out the pitch, and Scotland went on to Corkery himself. Like, you could see him making that call himself. And he actually also said that he was the one who made the call in the Donegal game in the Ulster final to mark Declan Bonner, just because he wanted to, because he got roasted by him the year before. So I think Eamon was pretty liberal, just let the boys sort it out themselves on the pitch.
Right. No, well, that makes sense anyways, because that was a good rejig by Derry, and having the extra man, you know, Johnny McGurk, I think, was the extra man. And, like, I mean, Derry were just able to saunter out of the fence, you know. We'll get to that in a minute, because Cork made a blistering start. Like, they were completely dominating. In the first 10 minutes, you'll be thinking, Jesus, Derry are in huge trouble here. 1-2 down, and Cork playing against the wind.
Yeah, it was scary stuff, like, and a cracking goal as well, like, from Kavanagh. Yeah. Like, again, when it's on Henry Downey, you're hammering the hammer, because Downey had an amazing dispossession of him just early on, and you thought, well, that's that taken care of, like, you know. Yeah. But then Cork just kept streaming through the middle, and they got, like, you know, did they get a couple of easy 13-yard frees as well around that period? Like, you know, it was just... Yeah, it just looked bad for Derry and Cork piling through them.
Did he? Yeah. And, like, I mean, Kavanagh's goal was absolutely sensational. I think he did the same in 1999 in the final as well, that they lost against Meath. It was a brilliant shot from him like that. But Kieran McKeever actually slipped. Did you notice that? He was coming out to actually intercept Kavanagh, come out and mark him, and he slipped at the wrong... Kavanagh took the ball on the burst and left Downey behind him. And McKeever would have come out and been standing in front of him, only he was too eager to get to him and actually slipped, and Kavanagh scored the goal.
It's funny, I heard Colin O'Rourke saying that McKeever was too late coming out, but I thought he timed it perfectly. Like, McKeever split the two men. McCarthy would have been free if he had a win too early. And he just split them, and then he knew when to go. But yeah, as you say, slips. Otherwise, he would have been bang, hitting him when he needed to hit him. So I think it was just a bit unlucky. But Jesus, like, people were slipping all over that part of the pitch. There must have been a concert on the week before.
But, like, I mean, the funny thing, like, I mean, even like Fergus said, that was the first goal Derry had conceded. So they're playing in their first final in... I don't know, were they in a final before? They never won it anyways. They'd never won an All-Ireland before.
Or something like that.
They'd never conceded a goal in the championship that year. Now they've conceded a goal. Their captain is the man marking the fellow who conceded a goal. And now they're 1-2 to no score down, playing with a strong wind. Like, I mean, they needed to be pretty strong mentally to not go, holy shit, we're in big trouble here.
yeah. But, like... there's a great interview with Joe Brawley afterwards. He said, I knew we had them and went 5 points down.
Yeah,
that makes us very upset. And obviously that happened against Dublin as well. But I think that sort of, it stands that the character of them. Like, it was a team that were just, they were ready. Like, and, you know, they were all leaders. They were all strong. And it suddenly, just out of nowhere, they were back in the game. They had chipped over 4 points without really dominating the match.
No, without playing that well, Conan. Like, I mean, Teddy McCarthy gifted them 2 points. Through letting the ball slip through his hand and then giving a terrible kick pass away.
Yeah.
And Mark O'Connor and the Cork goalkeeper, John Kearns, their mess up let Seamus Downey in for a goal. So, like, Derry found themselves 2 points up, having Cork played really well, and Derry had not exactly playing well, but have been gifted 1-2.
Yeah, like that mess up for the goal was awful. Like, you know, either one of them could have taken it, but none of them had.
Yeah.
And Downey was the only one that kept going. And it actually happened again in the second half. I think Brawley hit the post with his fist pass, and the keeper should have just went out and caught it, but he didn't, and someone recovered and put it over. But that was a strange thing. Like, I think in the second half, like, you know, Toholl and McGilligan started getting on top in the middle, but that didn't happen in the first half. Cork just... let them saunter back into the match. I don't know, did Cork take their foot off the gas after going 5 up? I'm not sure what really happened, but Derry were just allowed to creep back into it.
They were allowed to creep back in and go ahead. I thought Shea Fahey was excellent in the first half. I thought he shaded. He wasn't marking Toholl. He was marking the other midfielder, Brian McGilligan, and Toholl was on Teddy McCarthy. But I thought Shea Fahey was the standout midfielder in the first half. I'm not sure about you, even though you'd probably say overall midfield broke even, because McGilligan was playing pretty well too.
Yeah, I think so. But, like, there's some argument that McGilligan was having with the linesman over in the sideline in the first half, and Fahey just went and got the ball and struck it over the outside of his boot. It was on the ball and scored. And I don't know, was McGilligan rattled about what had happened? Because in the next play, Fahey caught it, and it was Toholl that ended up chasing him. You know, and it was just that there was the 3-4 minute period there where Fahey had just bombed down the pitch 3 times in a row, and that's when I first started really taking notice of him, and McGilligan had disappeared. Thankfully, he got back in then. But yeah, I thought Fahey was definitely a standout for Cork, and I think he was dominating midfield in the first half.
Yeah, no, I think he was. Barry Coffey was a target for Cork kickouts as well, because he was on Johnny McGurk, and obviously he'd have a big height advantage. Not that they got too much change out of it. Brolly got a great score in the first half, tried to take Corcoran on and realised, you know, he might not have the strength for Corcoran, but twisted back in and kind of got it was a lovely score off his left foot, kind of from a difficult angle, and with his body position didn't seem right, but he was still able to get a typical number 13 left-footed type of score.
Yeah, unpredictable. You know, you don't know when he's going to shoot or how he's going to shoot, but he still manages to get it over, so you can't block him.
Yeah. Like,
Brolly, it almost reminded me, we talked about the 1997 Ulster final, and every time he got the ball, he looked electrifying, but almost like they were underusing him a little bit because they liked running us. They played it out short from the back, and they ran through the middle where they were strong. Like, it's hard to disagree with the tactics because it worked well, but like, Jesus, every time Brolly got it, like, he sat up and you took notice, and, you know, like, I think it was per Brian Corcoran who was terrified. Like, you know, he was struggling to contain him, but thankfully for him, Brolly didn't get the ball as much as he probably should have.
Corcoran's a big unit. Like, Corcoran wouldn't fancy market someone like Brolly. A lot of the ball that Brolly got in the second half was out around the 45, too far out. You know, he was getting out in front. But obviously, just the end of the first half, Gormley came into the game, like we mentioned, and got those two scores. And now they have a lead of 3 points at half time. And at half time, Teddy McCarthy got the curly finger. Like I said, Danny Cullity came on for him, who played actually well. Danny Cullity was a good player. And Cork had to go to a two-man full forward line. John O'Driscoll went out to wing forward, and Coffey looked like he went wing back. So that was the change there from Cork point of view. Look, being down to 14 men, there is no doubt about that. And I keep saying this, it wasn't an injustice because Cahillan should have gone. Do you know what I mean? But there's no doubt that the 14 men, the way Derry were able to run the ball out in the second half, you know, and have men around the ball. I think they even took a quick kick out, which wasn't, which would have been very unusual at the time. You know, like, I mean, it definitely made a difference.
Oh, definitely. And like, you saw, like, the last three scores, it was Derry's halfbacks that were contributing to them. Like, it was Downey bombing through and popping off. Gary Coleman did it. McGurk scored one. Do you know, and Toholl's got another one, like, coming from late. Like, they were just able to run through them then, because, and I think that was probably a great move from the Derry management. Like, they brought on Dermot McNichol at halftime. Like, that was their reaction to, like, having a man extra, I suppose. And like, I know McGurk was the free man, but McNichol just has the running power, like, and he came on for Cassidy and started picking up ball deep and going through the middle as well. And I think that probably was what happened. They eventually just wore them down, and like, Cork's last score came, what was it, 7 minutes or something before the end? You know, Derry just wore them down, I think.
Oh, their Cork's last score was the goal, and that was 10 minutes into the second half. So, like, I mean, they were completely shut down. Cassidy put in the ball for the goal, but, like, I mean, Kieran O'Sullivan was cleaning up. Cork were a big bloody team. They were a big physical, monstrous team, especially in the backs. They were all big, strong, physical men. So I'd say Cassidy kind of went, he wasn't really in the game, but Kieran O'Sullivan was in the game too much for his. So Dermot McNichol came on and scored a brilliant point. And Colin O'Rourke says, wouldn't be noted as a great scorer of points.
I don't know where he got that from either. Like, you know, like, he's played with Dermot McNichol and then Ireland international rules team. Maybe he just saw him shanking a few shots out there. I don't know. But you know, Dermot McNichol's the youngest ever All-Star. He got an All-Star when he was in school. Like, you know, he's a superstar. You know,
so what age was he at that in 93 then?
In 93, well, he was in the minors in 84. So what's that, 9 years later? So 27.
Why couldn't he make the team that year then?
He was making the team, but he got injured. He had a bad hamstring injury, so he didn't start the semi-final and final.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, like, you know, McNichol's just like, you know, just this. He was the child prodigy. We always talk about these underage sensations. Like, he was the one. As I said, he played four Ulster, or he won three Ulster championships as a minor. Played 4 years. He won an All-Star when he was still at school in 84. Like, he was it. And I just thought that he brought that bit of, just that bit of drive and quality coming through the middle for Derry when he came on.
Oh, he did. He played well. So, like, I mean, John O'Driscoll scored a goal after a brilliant weighted pass by Don Davis. And that was the reason that was so brilliantly weighted is because the ball hit the ground and it would have skidded off the ground. So for, even it's like Don Davis judged the wet surface to be able, you know, to actually perfectly fall into John O'Driscoll's path as he was running. It was a brilliant finish. That put Cork one up with a decent wind. All right, they were a man down. But that's incredible that they didn't score again. And Derry scored four to close out the game. You know, like I was saying to Fergal there, like, I mean, that's serious performance. I know that they're man up, but sometimes a man up can be offset by a strong wind, you know, like, I mean, and maybe being against the wind suited the man up because they were able to run the ball a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. You're right when you're talking about the strength of Cork as well. Like, this is where I think the man up came, because he did. Derry, like, were very noted for being physically strong. Like, Peter McGrath talked about it in the first round when Derry hammered down. He just said, like, around the middle third, they're just far too physically strong for us. But Cork were able to match that, like, and sometimes better. So I think this is where, like, you know, having the extra man probably played into the advantage. It was two massive, strong teams coming against each other, and Derry just had the extra body throughout the match. You know, and that just helped them over the line.
Yeah, even incredibly, Cork took Corkery off towards the end and in desperation put Stephen O'Brien up front, who can play in the forwards. Didn't see much of Stephen O'Brien actually as kind of a marauding centre half back, which he became known for. And, like, I mean, Barton wasn't really in the game either. So I'm wondering, kind of, was Barton, you know, Damian Barton, who you'd imagine would have been a little bit more in the game as centre forward, was he actually, you know, maybe detailed to keep Stephen O'Brien quiet a little bit?
Yeah, potentially, because if you look through the rest of the championship, like, Barton was deadly. Like, you look at some of the clips, like, he was just a balanced centre forward. Like, he always had time in the ball, he'd find the right pass, and he didn't have that big an impact in that game in the final. And, like, you know, maybe a lot of that is down to Stephen O'Brien as well. He was doing a good job on him. Like, you know, in fairness to Stephen O'Brien, I thought he was going to be rocked because Toho put him on his arse straight away. And I thought, geez, this boy's not going to be seen in the game. But, like, he came back into it in a big way and grew into it in the second half, started marauding forward. And Barton, you know, he wasn't doing that good a job attacking, and I don't know whether he was doing that good a job defensively on O'Brien either.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It was a scrappy enough second half, to be fair, after such a brilliant first half. The first half, I thought, was of a very high standard, consider it was a slippy enough surface. But the second half, that big shower of rain came, two different showers of rain came in the second half. And, you know, it was probably a harder watch from a neutral, you know, quality-wise.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Like, sure, I'm just sucked in. Like, you know, you're just waiting.
And you're just waiting for
Derry to hold tight. Like, you know, that's all you care about. Like, you know, when you look back at the Ulster final, Derry played Donegal, and, like, you know, this moment has been, like, mythologized. And, like, Brian McGilligan caught out this ball, like, that was a play over the top, and Donegal would have scored a goal, in fairness. But you look back at the clip, it's just a hand pass somebody's tried to play and he's caught it out. And it is quite underwhelming now when you watch it 25, 27 years on. But, you know, it's the same as that when you're a Derry supporter, you're just watching it going, oh my God, look at all these heroes, look at that block from Scotland, look, you know, and you're just hanging on back to the walls, you're looking at the scoreboard, you don't care about the game, I suppose.
Yeah, can you believe Eamon Coleman got the sack in 94? Like, I mean, I don't remember this going on, if I'm being honest. I don't know what I was doing at the time, but I don't remember him getting the sack. He got the sack after the down game the following year in 1994, losing to a brilliant, brilliant down team who go on to win the All-Ireland, and your All-Ireland winning manager has just got the sack. Like, I mean, it was an incredible decision from the county board.
Yeah, there wouldn't be a whole lot surprising the Derry County Board, but that's sort of the equivalent, isn't it, of a Premier League manager getting promoted, or a Championship manager getting promoted into the Premier League and then they sack them.
Yeah.
You know, has one bad game or whatever, but yeah, like, and, like, a really strange one as well, because all the players loved him. Like, that was the big thing about Coleman. And, like,
should have went on strike for him to get him back until he told him not to.
That's it. Like, and he was so popular. Like, he was the sort of boy, like, to talk about him being down the back of the bus with the players.
Yeah.
You know, and yet he still had, like, even though he was a real leader and, like, you know, everybody knew he was boss, he took no nonsense, but he was able to build a managerial team around him as well, which is probably the most important thing, which a lot of people overlooked back then. Like, you know, he was the one that got in Mickey Moore, and he's the one that got in these coaches around him, and he's the one that kept all that camp happy. Like, even though there are probably a lot of them who were afraid of him, but they all loved him too. So, such a bizarre decision. And sure, He came back after him anyway, like, and they got him back in and they got Derry to an All-Ireland semi-final, you know, in 2001.
Yeah, I know, but like, I mean, that team probably should have won another All-Ireland. Like, I mean, it's interesting Fergal saying that they didn't carry the favourites tag too easily. Obviously, in 94 lost to Down, 95 lost to Throne, and 97 lost to Cavan. They're all big losses where Derry were strongly fancied because they won a league in 95 and 96. You know, like we said last week, that All-Ireland or that Ulster final in 97 was unforgivable, really, when they just won the under-21 All-Ireland and they were getting some good quality players out of that.
Yeah, there was a steady stream there that was coming from 80s and 90s. They definitely should have done more. Just happy to at least got one All-Ireland, but it is interesting.
That is a good point, because Fergal made that point as well. Like, I mean, do you look at it as in underachieving, or do you look at it, we won the only All-Ireland Derry has ever won?
They're icons, like, you know, they'll be forever remembered in Derry's annals, but, like, you know, in the cold, hard of day, light of day, they probably should have, they definitely should have won more Ulster championships, and the fact they haven't won since 98 is crazy. But it's interesting, like, Fergal's talking there about the favourites tag, because do you know when they went to play Down, like, they were all very nervous, like, in the 93 opener, because they had beaten Down the year before, and they thought, Jesus, Down will be gunning for us now. And the difference, like, they went and hammered Down anyway, they were a better team in that year. But then when they went and they played Donegal, they were so focused and so confident they were going to win that Ulster final because they had lost to Donegal the year before. Yeah. You know, and they probably just liked that idea of coming in under the radar, and maybe that was the whole mentality as well that Eamon Coleman was able to build. Like, he dropped Brawley for the Ulster final, and the whole thing was like, we don't want Dublin to know what we're going to bring in the semi-final.
Are you serious?
That's the story that Brawley told in the documentary, the Boys Who Won Maguire's, a Derry documentary, or the Men Who Won Maguire. And he said he was heartbroken. Like, you know, Coleman came up to him and said, look, we don't want to show our hand before the All-Ireland semi-final. But even saying that sort of instilled a belief in the players. At this point, he was thinking long-term and he believes in them. And apparently he came up to him at Croke Park afterwards, after the semi-final, and say, what did I tell you? Because Brawley was class after.
Brawley was man of the match, yeah. Mm. Okay, we'll leave it there and we'll come back because we'll talk about Brawley and performance of the weekend.
Dear, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
Okay, performance of the weekend, and we'll start with Joe Brawley. He only scored a point, but in fairness to him, he was constantly buzzing around and was up for it, you know, and was winning ball no matter where on the pitch, whether it was out to 45, whether it was in his corner, whether it was gone across to the other corner. He wanted to get on the ball, and he was lively, and he scored that brilliant point. And he missed a couple of chances. He actually missed 2 point chances, and then the fifth, he should have had four from play. He was very annoyed with himself in the first half. He missed 2 chances on his wrong kind of side, you know. But at the same time, over the course of the game, you know, deserved definitely a mention for performance of the weekend.
I think so. He's such a nice angle of run, doesn't he? When he gets the ball, it's like he's driving for the byline every time he gets it.
Yeah, he's a funny running style. But you're right. He goes. Unusually for a left footer, he tries to take them the long way.
Yeah,
that side. That's his go-to move first, and come around on the other side of them.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I think he's just trying to get them at sixes and sevens. Like, so he just drives on the inside. Yeah, even though that's on his right foot, and eventually he's probably thinking, if I can get this boy panicked enough, I can get turned. Like the score he got, I suppose. But he had a really nice. Yeah, it was an unusual run, but a nice solo, and that, like, his leg was very high. You know, so the ball was out of his hands very little. Like, you know, there was no chance to really dispossess him because he had it so high. He was almost like Messi sometimes, you know, where it's encouraging the defender to tackle you. you know, you're sort of just presenting it to them, but then that's when he tried to attack. It was nice, just a nice sort of style with the way he ran at defenders.
Yeah, technically what he's doing is stupid, because he's taking him on the side, he's solo in the ball. So, like, I mean, technically it should be very easy for the defender to tap the ball away. Usually you'll try and keep the defender on the other side of where you're soloing it. So you might hold them off with one hand and you're able to solo it with the other. Broly is soloing it with the left and taking them on by going that side as well. So it doesn't make any sense what he was doing, and he consistently did it. And, like, I mean, that was a feature of his career in general, doing that.
Yeah, I suppose he just had that pace, and he probably just wanted you to commit and try to tackle him, and then he might try to strip it. As I said, like, the ball wasn't available too much to try and take it off him. Like, so he had a very short window to try and tackle. But it's almost like, you know, when there's a left footer, like, especially when you're doing one-on-ones in training, you always just sort of show him his right foot. But, like, with him then, you couldn't do that, because he would take that space if you give it to him. So it was a good attribute to have. Like, you know, you couldn't just watch his left foot, because he was going to just go around you the other way.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he was man of the match in the semi-final against Dublin. He had an excellent game here, and he didn't get an All-Star. So obviously he didn't play. Is that the year he didn't play the Ulster final? That was obviously in the monsoon. And I'd say Eamon Coleman just realised this isn't a game that's going to suit Broly. He's not going to have any interest in this. You know, the ball's not going to bounce in front of him. It's just going to be a disaster. But he didn't get All-Stars until 96. And he's two All-Stars, 96 and 97. And I was thought that was interesting. In 97, Broly got an All-Star for a bad game in an Ulster final. Didn't win an Ulster final. Scored 1-3 against Monaghan, 1-4 against Tyrone. And in 93, he didn't get an All-Star after a man of the match performance in an All-Ireland semi-final and a very good performance in an All-Ireland final. How does that make sense? Get one. He got one in 97, having lost an Ulster final, having just played two good games in the lead up to it.
So this is, like, I just wonder, did they judge it differently back then? Did the league weigh more?
You're right, yeah. It must have been the whole, I think the league did have more. You're right, I should have thought of that, yeah.
No, but I also think they brought in, like, maybe underage, because, like, I was talking about Dermot McNichol earlier, and he won one in 1984. Like, he only Derry player to win one, and I thought, what? Derry didn't win an Ulster back then, and Derry played two games. They won a preliminary round, and then they lost in the quarterfinal to Tyrone. You know, and he won an All-Star, but, like, you know, it was probably based on the league and the fact maybe that he had underage success at the same time. I don't know. It was
You're right, because I think Leash got a couple of All-Stars in 1986, and they only won the league. So look, listen, we're being too I'm not going to accuse you as well. I'm being too influenced by what you get All-Stars for now, where the league means zero, you know. So, like, I mean, okay, well, at least that mystery. But then again, I wonder why he didn't get the All-Star in 1993 is another question, because, like, they're two big enough games to play very, very well in, to, you know, to have done enough. But anyways, Enda Gormley's another nomination here. 6 points, 3 from play, and got 3 frees. He got the last score of the game. All 3 from play were brilliant scores. He had the ball in his hands when the final whistle went as well. So he was back there. He also set Johnny McGurk up for that point by giving him a quick free. And, you know, just that punch from Cahillan, from that punch on, Enda Gormley is definitely man of the match.
Yeah, like, it just really toughened him up. He was a tough player anyway, but it woke him up, like, you know, when as much as he scored 6 points, and, like, you know, 6 beautiful points. Some of the frees were tough, and he was stroking them over, but
yeah,
he was just one dirty ball. Like, you know, you talked about him having the last ball, like, the ball in his hands at the final whistle. Like, that was a breaking ball that he won in defence as well. He threw himself around, like, he won dirty ball, he popped it off. It was just a bit of a tour de force. Like, you know, it was heartwarming watching it, and one of those ones where you just look up and think, geez, I want to be Enda Gormley when I grow up, like, you know.
And it was a brilliant performance. Henry Downey, I think his second half was excellent. First half, touch and go. I think Joe Kavanagh played very well, but Henry Downey just completely got on top of him. I suppose as Cork started going out of the game and he driving forward, had a lot more kind of buzz about him and pace about him. I know in 97, it's only 4 years after it, but in comparison to that performance against Cavan, this was chalk and cheese, I thought.
Ah, yeah. And I can just suppose, I think Henry's best attribute was that he always smelled blood. Like, he just knew when to go. He knew when to kick and knew when to go. And when he went, like, you know, when he did that, and I think there was 3 just bursting, like swashbuckling run straight through the middle. Like, you just, you knew when a team was on the ropes, and you knew when to sort of turn the screw. And yeah, I think that was the very best of him in that second half. Like, you're right, he was, I think he had an amazing dispossession in the first half. I think he was unlucky with a couple of tackles. He was just sort of standing up and boys were running into him, but he really just, when Derry needed him, like, you know, because Derry were dominant, they should have went on just to close the game out to get sucker points. And I think it was boys like Downey, especially Downey, who just dragged him back in front.
Yeah, I thought probably, Dermot Heaney was very good as well. I thought he was excellent in the first half. Like, he could have had a goal. He was giving Tony Davis all sorts of problems and got on a few balls in the second half as well. So I thought he deserves a mention too. For Cork, I think Kieran O'Sullivan throughout the whole game was outstanding, but he just turned into be a brilliant wing back. Shea Fahey, I thought, was very, very good. And I thought Mark O'Connor, I know he made the mistake for the goal, but he's kind of turning around wondering generally it's your goalkeeper that calls for that because he's facing it. So I wouldn't put the mistake for the Seamus Downey goal down to Mark O'Connor. I put that down to Kearns in the goal, that he should have been communicating better. And it looked almost like he called my ball because Mark O'Connor stopped. And that gave Seamus Downey, you know, the chance to catch up with Mark O'Connor and score the goal.
Yeah, if the keeper calls anything, no matter what it is, like,
you have to stop.
Yeah, you have to stop. Like, you know, the keeper has to come then once he starts shouting, because you can't just depend on the defender processing everything you said. Like, you know, if you hear the keeper, you know he's around. And he, like, you know, the best keepers just clean that out all the time. You know, if the keeper wants him to just catch it, just say nothing, stand in your line, don't get caught with that fisted ball. Like, you know, instead they both just got caught in no man's land and Downey came in. But
I've seen Seamus Downey now in two games and he's been very underwhelming in both of them.
Yeah, like, he's no Henry Downey anyway, but I'm just a physical player of a good left foot, like, you know, and a good brain on him, like, you know.
When does he use this good left foot? Because I've seen no evidence of it in two big games.
In fairness, we were talking about him in the 97 final. We sprained a few passes in the second half. Like, he had a good head on his shoulders. Like, and
right.
I don't know if we've been playing. Maybe it would be full forward nowadays, but I sort of imagine him just out around the pitch a bit more, getting on ball and pinging it inside. Maybe he's the 1993 version of Jack McCarron.
Well, I would say he's the 93 version of Owen O'Gara.
Yeah.
And that's Owen O'Gara when he came on the scene first.
No, he's still got the winning goal, and Derry's only all Ireland wins, so we
exactly. Anyone else you want to nominate? Tohill, I suppose, was good throughout. Although, I don't think it was Tohill's best, most dominating performance ever. But I suppose when you look at it, he was on the ball a lot, and he was in the game a lot.
Yeah, I suppose like Damien McCusker, I always like a couple of big saves, and it was probably before his time, like just how quickly he had the ball on the square as it was going wide. It was like clucks and stuff, like he had it set up ready to kick out again.
But interestingly, he played full forward and midfield for Derry, I was reading.
There you go. That's the McCusker clan. But Kieran McKeever, I just, like, every time he plays, I just think he's always worthy of a man of the match performance. And like, I thought that was scandalous. One of the biggest injustices, that he never got an All-Star that year, but he got sent off and won the games in the Ulster Championship. So that was that rule back then. If you got a red card, you couldn't get a nomination.
Right. Okay, so who am I going to give this to? I don't think I can look past anyone other than Enda Gormley. Who got official man of the match?
Official man of the match? I'm just looking it up here. I can't even see it.
You'd be doing well to look past Enda Gormley when you look at his contribution. The three difficult frees, the incredible first point from play, the last point, then, you know, winning the break at the very final whistle, setting up Johnny McGurk. Like, he must have been responsible for 7-8 scores, you know, out of 114. Like, I mean, give me a break. You'd be doing, like, I don't know who influenced the game more than him.
Yeah, no, it's just great attitude as well. Like, you know, I love that finger point into Callahan's face.
Yeah.
Like, he talked about it's sort of well documented in Derry. Like, they were 5 down against Dublin in the semi final, but you know, Mickey Moore had apparently this amazing half time speech, but it was based around this fan who was shouting the typical Nordic team shit in the bucket, you know, as they come down to Croke Park. And but they could just even hear Enda Gormley talk about that, you know, 25 years later. Like, he he really, like, that really got to him, and he was thanking that lad that day, like, he's the reason we beat Dublin, that, you know. So I think he just has that in him, like, you know, that wanting to stick two fingers up to somebody who doubts him.
He needs that. He needs that for his performance. Right, well, that's it. Enda Gormley performance of the weekend, so congratulations to him. And we'll leave it there, Conan. A nice trip down memory lane on your the greatest day in Derry football. It's actually interesting when Fergal was saying there that Derry are second on the roll of honour in Ulster. That, you know, when I think of Derry from, you know, being a teenager in the '90s, that they're this big powerhouse winning all Ireland.
Second bottom,
league.
Yeah.
Yeah, second bottom rather. You know, that it's not usual, rather than usual, for Derry to be winning even Ulsters.
Yeah, like they're behind Antrim. I think they've won 7 in their history. Like,
yeah,
know, like it's I think it's just probably a product of, you know, half of Derry's population's in the city. You know, the city's where I'm from, and they're doing a lot of work, and a lot of money's been pumped into it. But there's only 4 clubs in there, like, you know, and there's 40 clubs in Derry, so like that sort of shows you the balance. So like where all the football's being played, well, a lot of it is just in rural parts, and it's a tiny population, and like, you know, part of that population is unionists as well, like, so it's not a big pick in reality, even though Derry would have a bigger population. It's that's a shame, and especially if you look at them, like their minor also titles, like they actually have the second most there, so right. It's not translating somewhere along the way.
Yeah, it's the nightlife in Derry City, maybe, or something like that. Conan, we'll get to the bottom of it. Right, come here, I'll let you go. I'll talk to you next Monday, or I'll talk to you on Thursday.
All right.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their houses for 10 years.